We don't like to think about life ending, but it certainly does. Hospice and other programs are now more numerous in providing health care for people who do not have long to live. Today's guest wants to expand palliative care, the step before hospice, as one quote puts it. Dr. Michael Fratkin works in Eureka and is in the process of setting up a new organization to provide palliative care. The organization is called Resolution Care. Dr. Fratkin, thanks for joining us on The Exchange.
Thank you so much, Jeff. It's great to talk.
So let's start with the easy stuff. What is palliative care?
Well, palliative care is defined as an extra layer of support, usually an interdisciplinary team of professionals, nurse, social worker, chaplain, all working in parallel and coordinated with your regular care providers. And the focus is on working with people and their families who are facing serious illness.
So it's not necessarily about getting better, but certainly about feeling better.
Oh, it's about quality of care from top to bottom. Quality of life.
Is this a tough one for medicine to wrap its mind around? Because this isn't really about correcting the underlying problems, right? It's more about treating the symptoms?
Well, it actually doesn't really matter so much if it's hard for medicine to wrap its head around. What this is about is people, not patients. This is about what it's not very hard for people facing serious illness to wrap their head around this challenge. And everything relatively new is a relative effort to bring into being. The palliative care movement was initiated maybe 15 or so years ago by an amazing woman, Diane Meyer, in New York City. She founded the Center to Advance Palliative Care, and we now have something like 60 or 70% of hospitals in the country that have some form of a palliative care program in the inpatient world. The trend or movement these days is to move upstream and out of the acute care settings and start providing services to people where they live on their own terms while they're still walking around and getting benefit from medical therapies for their underlying illness.
I'm glad you said walking around, because this is a clear point I think that needs to be made to listeners, is to understand we're not talking about people who are that close to the end of life. They're not at hospice point. They still can be moving around doing lots of things with their lives.
Oh, that's right, and they are, actually. I mean, hospice does an amazing, amazing job and with the very intense and dynamic needs of people in the last days or weeks of their life. But the reality is that that same kind of an interdisciplinary team only gets a very limited time working with people. The average length of stay is somewhere between 2 and 3 weeks on hospice, and that's a lot of stuff going on in a very short period of time and limited capacity to really help facilitate healing for people and their families. What they like and what I help to provide is people, as soon as they're eligible for hospice, that the transitions to hospice care are smooth and sooner, so that the hospice team and family and person get a chance to identify what the goals are and achieve them before that last breath.
So you mentioned that palliative care tends to be an inpatient thing, so it sounds like your focus then with Resolution Care in particular is to make it more of an outpatient kind of thing.
Well, and it's not just me. I'm looking across the landscape of the shifting and changing models of care, and there's a strong movement towards bringing outpatient palliative care, ambulatory palliative care to people who are actively undergoing treatment for cancer or for chronic lung disease or heart disease or various other serious illnesses. So palliative care has moved from really putting a stake in the ground in the hospital setting to reaching out and upstream to help people who really have quite a lot to grapple with when they're seriously ill in the last many months of their life or even years of their life.
Are there any particular issues with insurance coverage for palliative care? I mean, I know there used to be. It seems like by now those might have changed.
There are not. We function as medical specialists and consultants from a fee-for-service billing structure. But the real crux of the matter is, how do you support the comprehensive interdisciplinary team, the doctor and the nurse and the social worker and a spiritual guide and perhaps a community health worker? How do you fund that when the only traditional model of paying for health care is by incentivizing fee-for-service billing? In other words, the incentives are aligned towards making more stuff happen to people. How do you move and pivot towards creating the proper system to care for people by doing more for them? In other words, the incentives are misaligned. You can do procedure after procedure. Every doctor visit is compensated. But the truth is, it may not be a doctor that makes all the difference in the world. It may be a patient care assistant who makes sure that the patient is taking their medicines right or can get to the store. It may be the nurse, or it may be a chaplain working with the patient to help them understand and complete their psycho-spiritual journey in life. Those are the things that will deliver value and quality of living for people. And so if you align things towards just what doctors can do to people or by fee-for-service visits, you really can't drive value or outcomes in the way that people want. And when I say drive value or outcomes, I mean quality of living, patient experience and satisfaction. And if you're a payer or a member of our society, you'll also want to deliver on the goal of reduced costs, reduced low-value, high-cost interventions.
Dr. Michael Fratkin is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the founder of Resolution Care. He's from Eureka. You can join us on the exchange as we talk about palliative care, 800-838-3760, anywhere in our listening area. 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So what led to the decision to create Resolution Care?
The need for sustainability. About 4 months ago, I went downstairs to wake up my daughter in the morning. Her name's Bella. And when she opened her eyes and looked at me, she said, "Goodbye, Daddy." And I just knew I'd been working too hard and away from my family too much, and that the current structures of healthcare don't support necessarily a sustainable team-based approach. And I knew that I had to pull the trigger on making something like that happen. In the short run, I'm working like crazy to complete a crowdfunding campaign and generate a viable, sustainable structure. But in the intermediate term, my daughter can expect to see a lot more of me, as well as my son Max and my incredible wife, Julie. Yeah,
that would be a tough message, "Goodbye, Daddy," first thing in the morning.
It was a big ouch.
I can imagine.
But so, really, over the last 2 or 3 years, what I've been facing is the sort of suffocating pressure of 3 or 4 times as much work as I can possibly accomplish without really a comprehensive team to help me manage it. And so since the traditional incentive structures don't support the development of a team on the basis of revenue generating by fee-for-service billing, I knew I had to come out of the box and think of something different and maybe even a little bit crazy to pull this off.
So what do you envision? You already have office space set up in Eureka, is that right?
Actually, I don't really have office space in the traditional fashion. I've been watching people make their way through a serious illness for a long time, and it's always seemed a bad fit to take people who are seriously ill and add yet another office visit. Add yet another burden of getting themselves up, getting themselves dressed, getting themselves from wheelchair to car, from car to parking lot, from parking lot to office, and then to deal with administrative staff in that way. It always seemed misaligned. People going through serious illness, in my mind, aren't patients. They're people. And by the time they get to the office and sit on the little exam table, they become patients. And that's just not the kind of work I wanted to do. So I decided that people were best served in their homes, and I'm creating that interdisciplinary team that I talked about, and that interdisciplinary team is going to take care of people in our community, in our service area, only by house calls and virtual house calls.
Virtual house calls. Explain that part.
Virtual house calls are essentially connections via video conferencing to people right where they live, wearing their fuzzy slippers and drinking their tea. They'll sit there and click at the proper time. I'll click on my end, or another member of my team will, and poof, we'll be in communication by video directly and efficiently in their home. Now, many of the visits that we'll do, if necessary, will be on the ground in their homes. But some of the visits may just be check-ins or small problem-solving or better clarifying what kinds of goals people have or what they need. And I've discovered over the last 6 or 9 months of experimenting that video conferencing with patients and connecting with people as people through that connection is unbelievably effective. And in fact, it may be better than what happens when you see a person in your office. The typical experience in a clinical setting for a very sick patient is that they're sitting on the exam table, maybe they're wrapped up in some blue paper or something or other, and the doctor or provider is sitting there looking at a computer screen and glancing back over their shoulder now and again as they tap away to document all the necessary data into the computer system. At least this time, when their doctor or provider is looking at a computer screen, the patient or person will be there.
Interesting. Put the person on the computer, then they can talk to them.
That's right. Isn't it crazy?
It really is. Here's a call from Grumpy John in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Dr. Michael Fratkin. We're talking about palliative care.
Thanks very much. Dr. Fratkin, I've got a friend who lives in Texas who, in order to get the Vicodin that she needs, because her back has been through multiple surgeries, she's in constant pain, she has to go pay $40 for a doctor visit and $80 for 30 pills of Vicodin. Instead of being able to get them at a bulk discount, you're going to be taking this for years. Buy them 200 at a time, and you can get 200 for $80 instead of 30 for $80. My suspicion is this is the result of the DEA taking out revenge on our medical system for the legalization of marijuana. And in my opinion, these people are coming down hard on all palliative care just because they're a bunch of SOBs and they do not want to have people have access to pain meds.
All right, let's take it from there, Grumpy John. Thanks for that. So pain medication and the DEA, what connections do you see, Dr. Fratkin?
Well, I think it's a really complicated topic. And I think that what we've seen over the years is this pendulum swing of pressure on providers to avoid under-treating pain and more of an invitation from the world of academic pain medicine as well as the governing bodies to emphasize treating rather liberally, and then a swing in the other direction. And we're currently in a swing in the other direction where there's a lot of oversight and a lot of concern. And for good reason. Overall in our society, the amount of prescription opiates, which are such a complicated molecule for human beings, the number of prescriptions is astronomical, and the amount of pain and suffering, paradoxically, that they cause is quite substantial in terms of unintentional and even intentional death, the challenge of chasing physical dependence and people with chronic pain, and the subtle nature of long-term use of medicines that are up inside the brain. So the swing of the pendulum is a little bit more constrained and restrictive. But actually, as it regards to palliative care, this is not one of the specialties that are targeted by any of the governing bodies as high risk. In fact, in hospice and palliative medicine, we're very circumspect and thoughtful, always balancing out the trade-offs of using medications to improve quality of life while also preserving maximum functionality and maximum well-being for our patients. So we're not really under the thumb like perhaps pain doctors and primary care doctors are regarding prescribing opiates.
You mentioned earlier about trying to get Resolution Care set up with a crowdfunding campaign. How has that been going?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked. I'm going to refresh my browser and tell you right now. We started about 40 days ago. We close at midnight tomorrow night. For most of the time, I was white-knuckled and even kind of mopey. But over the course of the last 24 hours, we've received almost $24,000. Our goal is $100,000, and we've received 81,000 $699 in contributions from 372 donors. And the good news about that is that a couple of nights ago, community member gave me a call and offered a challenge. And they said that if we could close the gap between where we were at about $56,000 and $70,000, of which we have done so, they would make a contribution of $30,000 to take us over the top. So while the number is 81.6 or 81.7 on the campaign on Indiegogo, we have exceeded our goal once that wire transfer comes through. So I'm just so thankful. I want to say thank you 372 times to all of the people. There have been contributions from $5, actually $1, to $10, or to $10,000. And I want to say that the first contribution was of $19 from my daughter Bella,
because she wants to see you at home. So you're going to make it. You're over the top, and there will be.
We're going to make it to 100,000, and that provides kind of the bare bones budget that we need. It provides all the gear and infrastructure we need. It provides for an administrative coordinator.
Okay, sorry to cut you short. That's great news. Congratulations,
okay, great.
Dr. Michael Fratkin is the founder of Resolution Care. Thanks so much for joining us today at the Jefferson Exchange.
You bet, Jeff. Thank you so much.